Welcome to the current federal tax developments for the week of February the 24th, 2020. Current federal tax developments are brought to you by Kaplan Financial Education and your State Society of CPAs. This week we're going to do something a little different. We're actually going to take a look at one key development that happened this week, which was the issuance of proposed regulations on meals and entertainment following the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Major reason for doing that this week, to be totally honest, is I took a look at what we had otherwise. And what we had otherwise were a couple of self-employment tax cases, a significant release by the IRS late in the week on revenue procedure for changing accounting methods, but only if you're in agriculture and you had made an election under 263 Cap A, and you're now not required to use Cap A anymore because you're under $25 million. And obviously, if your clients have that background, yeah, you want to take a look at that ruling. But otherwise, you know, not much really went on. The self-employment cases, there was a Mary Kay case that pretty much just gave us what we had before as a result. It was a little more interesting case involving a former State Farm agent, which was more the IRS's failure to prove that there had been a deferred comp arrangement in question. So it was kind of interesting. Some of the problems was more of a proof issue. So but fundamentally, though, I think we all get stuck with this issue of having to do with entertainment expenses and meals expenses. And so that's why we wanted to look at the key issue that came out this week, which is what we're going to devote this week to, and that is the release by the IRS, right, of what we have now, of the regulations that deal with meals. Regulation 10814-19, proposed regulations under Section 274. Actually, proposed regulations 1.274-11 and 1.274-12, that'd be brand new. They came out here on Friday, and they deal with the fact that we had major changes made to Section 274 by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. What's Section 274, you might ask? Well, Section 274 is an override of the standard rule that we can deduct for business purposes all ordinary necessary business expenses. Section 274 says, in certain cases, we're not going to let you deduct some expenses. We're going to reduce your deduction for others to 50%, and we're going to require you to have documentation for certain others in order to claim any deduction that is more than the standard level necessary to prove that you have a right to a deduction, but specific items must be documented to prove a business connection. What the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changed in 274 effectively was it removed the ability to claim any sort of deduction for entertainment expenses. Previously, we used to be able to deduct entertainment expenses if we could show either that the entertainment was directly related to the active conduct of a taxpayer's trade or business, a directly related exception to the total bar, or in the case of an item directly preceding or following a substantial and bona fide business discussion, including business meetings, a convention, otherwise sporting event, etc., the item associated with the active conduct of a taxpayer's trade or business. And so we have that. So we could take if we had a taxpayer meeting before or after, let's say we took the taxpayer to a professional basketball game, they would be able to claim that as a business expense for going to the basketball game. Now we're kind of blocked on that, because now what Section 274 ended up doing was removed all of those options to claim business-related entertainment by saying, at this point, sorry, you cannot claim a deduction for any of these items that are business-related entertainment items. They're going to be non-deductible. Now, the other thing that got interesting was, if you remember at the time when this came out, there was concern through much of 2018 that we weren't sure whether some or potentially all meals had been clipped by this particular change in the law. And the reason for that was because historically, if you go back to like the 86 Tax Act, Gary McBride had an excellent article that talked about this early in 2018 that looked at the history of the entertainment exception, the entertainment rules. And as he pointed out, entertainment and meals were really considered part of the same thing. And, you know, meals were considered a form of entertainment. And as I was saying early in the year last year, it's like, you know, if you ever go look up on the web for some example of, you know, tell me information for marketing about entertaining clients, the first thing in every article was always taking them to some restaurant. So it was like, ooh, this looked potentially bad. But in the committee reports, the joint committee and the members of the staff that wrote the bill had said it wasn't intended to get rid of business meals. So the catch became, even though we've historically treated them as such, even though Congress had treated them as such, this said we didn't mean to. Now the IRS had to go back and say, well, given what the law says, is there a reason to believe we still could get business meals? And the IRS finally determined that for that purpose, yes, meals were not something that were considered entertainment for these purposes. In the preamble to these proposed regulations, the IRS makes clear that prior to the change made, it wasn't really important to decide whether meals were or were not entertainment because they both got the 50% disallowance rule. And while there's some differences in how meals were dealt with versus entertainment, there were some very specific items, they decided that really, we didn't really worry about where they were different. They pointed out that Congress, while they did pull 274A, or basically changed it dramatically, to get rid of the deduction, the 50% deduction, they left in all the parts of 274 that talked about meals. So they decided, well, Congress must be telling us that at least as of now, they've decided meals are not the same thing as entertainment. That was a useful thing to find out. Also, interestingly, in the preamble and in the regulation itself, they also point out something a lot of us noticed. If you assume meals were okay, then you also notice that we had totally lost, because we used to be required to document meals under the special documentation rules, the anti-Cohen rules, that required you to have documentation of place, time, who you talked with, amount, all that sort of stuff. Had to have those documents or no deduction was allowed. Those are the anti-Cohen rules. Basically to overturn what was the decision in the case of Cohen versus Commissioner with regard to entertainment and meals expenses. Those rules got pulled out for meals. The only meals that are now subject to those rules of 274D are the meals related to travel, while, meals related to travel by employees and business people. Those still require this detailed level of documentation, but no other meal does. Now, that's kind of absurd, but it is the law that those need documentation. But when you take your client out to dinner, you don't need that. It seems like there's probably a higher risk of things being done back at home than with travel. But hey, what the heck? So they do make that clear. The strict substantiation rules are gone. Now, please don't take that to mean you can get away with no substantiation. And I tell people when I teach courses, this is one not really to emphasize to your client. This is more because if using Cohen is not a good strategy, I'll phrase it that way. In court, that tends to go badly whenever we're talking about a Cohen case. The regs also tell us very clearly, and this will come back to haunt us later, there is no more ability to claim a deduction, 100% deduction for any foodstuff under the de minimis rule. It used to be that if you could show that employees were excluding the amount from their wages under the de minimis rule, that there was a strong argument that you could wipe out the entire, you could take the entire deduction. And that was partially because it was tied in with employee cafeteria provisions, but they also mentioned the de minimis rule under 132. Well, now it's going to be very clear. There is no ability, even de minimis amounts of food and beverage, even if you're going to exclude it from the employee's W-2 because it is de minimis, and we'll talk about that coming up later. The snack room, the snacks in the break room are in trouble here. You still got to disallow half the deduction. And the argument would probably be at this point, Congress got rid of the exception. And number two, the de minimis rule is a practical rule that says we don't have to figure out who exactly drank how many cups of coffee to figure out how to charge that bag of coffee, that we bought at bag of ground coffee we bought at the supermarket, how much of that to put in each person's W-2. But it's still pretty clear we got a bag of coffee that we can account for and that we could disallow half the deduction on. So that'd be it. Also, the preamble notes very clearly, there's a series of exemptions at 274E, right? And those exemptions were not changed by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And specifically, some of them will allow us to get 100% deduction for meals. They also talk about entertainment at 274E. Now, we're going to get proposed regulations on the meals part of E. We are not going to get proposed regulations on the entertainment part of E. That part of E is not really discussed directly in these regs. Okay, we get two brand new regulations already mentioned, 274-11 on entertainment, and 274-12 on meals. Now, these are at the moment proposed regulations. Obviously, they have to go through the comment period and become final. They would be effective for years beginning on and after the date the final regulations are published in the Federal Register. But taxpayers are allowed to rely on these for meals and entertainment incurred after 12/31/17, that is, those covered by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changes. And it says, until the regulations go final, you can still rely on those 2018-76. Those who don't remember, that was when we finally got notice from the IRS that, yeah, we believe business meals are still okay, and here are the criteria for them to be okay. As a practical matter, notice 2018-76 has been effectively just brought into these regulations. So these regulations do not make a major change from 1876, but you can still use it. So essentially what they're telling you is, I think the reason why they mention this here is, you can pretty much do what you've been doing. You've been following the notice that came out late in 2018, and that's how you've been handling business meals. Yeah, you're going to get to keep handling them that way until these regulations become final. And with the, what's in the regulations, if they're not changed in some way, you're still going to effectively be following that notice going forward. So there are three categories of barred expenses. This is Regulation 1.274-11. And it tells us, first, you cannot claim a deduction for any entertainment expenses. You cannot claim any deductions for expenditures related to a facility used in connection with entertainment activity that includes dues or fees paid to a social, athletic, or sporting club organization, or amounts paid or incurred for membership in any club organized for business, pleasure, recreation, or other social purposes. And these are all the entertainment type structures. Now, the IRS comes down in this reg, they give us a definition of what's entertainment. And what they tell us is an activity which is of the type generally considered to constitute entertainment, amusement, or recreation. That includes entertainment at bars, theaters, country clubs, golf and athletic clubs, sporting events, on hunting, fishing, vacation, other trips, including such an activity related solely to the taxpayer or the taxpayer's family. Those are all considered entertainment. Now, there are three specific modifications modifications to that general definition. First, they tell us right away it doesn't matter if there is a business reason otherwise for the expenditure. Ordinary and necessary isn't relevant here. Why not? Because, as I told you at the beginning here, this is an override to the standard 162 business deduction rules. So don't try to argue that, well, yeah, it's entertainment, but there's a real, real business reason for doing it. We'll get to some exceptions the IRS has carved out that will make it in some obvious cases where it will work. So, for instance, we don't worry about the fact that if we're a restaurant, we're essentially providing entertainment to our customers, let's say, or meals to our customers, because they're paying us for it. That's a different problem, right? But generally, ordinary and necessary will not get you out of this issue for entertainment. And the term entertainment includes the cost of an activity, which may otherwise be a business expense, but if it satisfied the personal, living, or family needs of any individual. And it's context specific. For instance, in some cases, paying for a hotel suite might be a deductible business expense for travel, or it might be entertainment. Paying for a car to be used by a customer. If you are, let's say, a car repair shop, that's probably deductible. That's not entertainment. But if you are, let's say, an accounting firm, and you're, for whatever reason, providing your clients with Porsches, that's entertainment. Okay, even if you might not think driving through rush hour is entertaining, that's entertainment under these regulations. And we also exclude some items that, even though they do satisfy living expenses, you know, they still are close enough to business. So, for instance, the obvious example here, right? Living expenses incurred in a business context. The hotel room for the employee who's out of town on business. We're going to allow that particular structure to continue. The regulations go on to tell us some interesting things. We borrow explicitly the separately stated food and beverage rule that's found in Notice 2018-76 in our definition of food and beverage. So if food and beverages are purchased, are stated separate from the entertainment, we're allowed to claim them under the 50% deduction rule, not a total disallowance. If they are not separately stated and they're provided as part of entertainment, it's just entertainment. Now, the IRS in this case, we're talking about an objective test is their term. And I consider that amusing because it's really subjective. But It's to determine whether an activity is of a type considered to be entertainment, right? And the idea is, does it actually look like this in terms of an entertainment? You know, it precludes arguments the entertainment means only entertainments of others, and an expenditure for entertainment should be characterized as an expenditure for advertising or public relations. Watch out for that business promotion line. Agents will figure that one out in about 2 minutes. You can't argue. I don't care that it's entertainment. Even if you claim it's advertising, it doesn't matter. Even if you claim it's business promotion, it doesn't matter. Remember, 274 overrides 162. That's the most important thing to remember. This is an override. So saying, oh, it makes perfect sense. It meets all these requirements. Wonderful. You met requirements for 162. This overrides 162. So, yeah, you got to do something more than meet 162. Now, the IRS does provide a series of examples. And in this reg, they made it very clear. They said, ever since the rules have come down, we've gotten lots of letters and other documents from taxpayers asking and advisors, etc., dealing with specific fact patterns to try to make them work. And since the notice came out, we've also seen those come down. So they're going to say, look, instead of actually trying to write regs that deal with all these very detailed situations, we're going to deal with some of the normal ones in examples. That means it is incredibly important that you take a look at the examples in these regulations. Now in proposed form, because it tells you the IRS is thinking for the moment, and certainly follow up in the final form to see what the regulations look like. Now I realize some of you get all worked up about reading regs and reading examples in regs, and I'll admit it'd be nicer if the IRS didn't always use letters in regulations to stand in for taxpayers, and black acre and white acre to stand in for properties. It's a little bit weird how they write them. Still not sure how that one got into the final regulations for 9 Cap A, where they actually named a taxpayer animal care. That was the example for how you could divide a business into two pieces. That was added in the final regs. I have a feeling it just got snuck in and nobody actually did a overview and check of that and said, oh, this doesn't follow our standard form. But they're there. So if you can live with the ABs or all the other things, the KJs and all these things they like to use, these examples are important. And if you get download this week's printout, you know, this week's document, which I said is devoted to this particular case, we've got these examples in there, right? And these examples, they talk about the entertainment regs, really came straight from 2018-76. And what that means is that basically you've seen these examples, or at least something awfully close to them before. We modified, as I recall, the final two to take them out of a baseball game. We decided we're not going to use baseball for everything. But essentially, they're still the same regs. So what this talks about here in the first example, you take a client to a baseball game. That's entertainment. No deduction, right? So that's fairly simple. No deduction. I paid for the tickets. I went to go see the Diamondbacks. Now I'm recording this today. I guess it's Sunday. And they were supposed to have their first preseason game or the first exhibition game yesterday. Here in the actually all the games in the Phoenix area for spring training got canceled. But apparently they'll have them today, so some people are going to be incurring these non-deductible expenses today. So if you take them out to the Diamondbacks game and you simply pay for the tickets, the payment for the ticket's non-deductible. But example two tells us, but if while we're at the game, I buy hot dogs and some beer for the client, so we have hot dogs and beer at the game, that's separately paid for. I take my credit card out, pay for that separately. It was not part of some bundle to get into the game. Those hot dogs and beers at the entertainment event are meals which can qualify for the 50% deduction, assuming you meet the criteria we have from the old revenue procedure, right? That'll be good. Now, third example, you are going to a basketball game. You're in the skybox, and the agreement you have with the professional sports team was that when you acquired the skybox, you were going to get food with it. That used to be the way these were structured regularly. That's going to be all entertainment. You can't try to figure out how much of what you paid for the skybox represented food. However, if they separately invoice, which by the way is how they're doing it now, if they separately invoice the food from the charge for the skybox, then you can claim the half deduction as long as the amount invoiced for food is reasonable. So yeah, basically we got good old notice 2018-76. It's the same examples and the same basic rules we had before. Again, if you have an entertainment event, you want it to be a separately stated for any meals you're going to get there. You don't want bundled. You don't want to buy one of those deals where you get baseball tickets that include a hot dogs and beers as part of the deal. It's like, no, I want to buy the baseball ticket, and then we'll buy the hot dogs and beers once we're inside the stadium. That's how you'll get the deduction. Now, that was proposed rates 1.274-11. Not much there because entertainment's non-deductible. It just tells you how to get something out of there for represents food and beverage. 1.274-12, food and beverage, is the more interesting regulation. Now, it starts out with the same three basic rules as those 2018-76 to get a deduction for a business-related meal. The expense must not be lavish or extravagant under the circumstances. The taxpayer and employer of the taxpayer must be present the furnishing such food and beverage, and the food or beverage had to be provided to a business associate. If all of those are true, then we have a potentially deductible business meal. As I mentioned before, because this is not the travel-related meal that we'll talk about, we do have to have all those standard documents you've always been told for years to get. This one does not absolutely need it. Now, as I said before, that doesn't mean to tell the client not to worry about documenting. Too many times when people go and, when we try to use the Cohen defense, that was George M. Cohen who didn't keep records, the court allowed him some deductions because they could reasonably estimate how much he should have paid for entertainment. Your client almost always loses that line because the court says there's not enough evidence here for us to reasonably estimate. But if you are in an exam for 2018 and later, and the client's entertainment records turn out to be imperfect, at least you do have the attempt to fall back on Cohen. But remember, Cohen is always a Hail Mary pass. You want to avoid using Cohen if you can. So for better or worse, we'll deal with that issue. So as we talked about, we have some examples here of what would meet the requirements of the notice. And this is pretty straightforward. The first example we have here, which is in the proposed regs, talks about just taking a business associate to lunch, right? In this case, we take a client. Client will be one of the business associates that are going to be defined here. We take our tax client out and we have lunch. So, take the client out, have lunch, pay for the lunch. That's going to be a business meal, 50% deductible. Similarly, if I take out one of my employees to lunch for a business review, so if I'm going for a business review, or I'd say not a business review, but let's say I'm going for the performance review for the employee. So essentially, when we have that, we're doing the performance review, and we're paid for that lunch, we can take a deduction equal to one half of that amount. Okay, that's the second example. We take the employee for lunch. For the performance review, that meal's fine. Okay, now, we talked already about this issue. The IRS intends for these examples to illustrate things. And it's going to become much more important when we get to other ones here where it's clear they're illustrating specific issues because they're being bombarded with the snacks in the break room question, the coffee you're going to buy for the office staff. Now we're going to talk some about, we're going to get examples there. You won't like the answer, but we're going to get examples, okay? As noted, we've got that. The meals that are on travel still have to be strictly documented. So again, we need to have documentation of the amount of the expense, the time and the place we had our meal, the business purpose of that trip we were on, right? And how it relates to the business. What's the purpose? How does this all relate? We need to have those documentations. Not required for the others. The regulations also provide and continue what had generally been the traveling companion rule. It talks about if the employee brings along the employee's spouse, a dependent, or any other traveling companion, generally, the meals paid for that person will not be deductible. Rather, those meals will be excluded from deduction. The reason why? Essentially, there's no business purpose. If the traveling companion is actually an employee of the taxpayer that's paying for it, and the travel has a bona fide business purpose for that spouse, and the expenses would otherwise be deductible by the spouse or the dependent or the traveling companion, if they incurred them personally, ignoring the fact under Section 67G, an employee is not going to be able to probably get the deduction, but ignore that. Let's just assume that wasn't there and the good old would have gone on old style 2106, then we're good. Okay. Now we have a number of definitions here that are key. First one we have here is definitely food or beverage, and this one telegraphs what's not going to be a fun thing. Food and beverage is not just meals. Very clearly it talks about snacks are part of that. And also, here's a key line at the very end of the definition of food and beverage. Remember, food and beverage generally is a 50% only deduction. Specifically, it closes out, says, regardless of whether food and beverage are treated as de minimis fringes under section 132E. That is a problem because that tells you where we're going with the snack room, with the snacks in the break room. The snacks in the break room are food. They're going to be 50% disallowed, even though you don't have to put them in the employee's W-2. It's going to be an issue, but they're food and beverage. We talk about food and beverage expenditures. They're also defined here. They include tips, delivery fees, and sales tax that you may pay on the food. But it does not, and this is useful. This has been a concern a lot of people have had who, let's say, were operating a facility like Google, where you provide lunches for free to your employees. We knew that that deduction was now only 50%, was going to eventually go to zero. But the question becomes, does it also include all the costs of the kitchen help, etc., for operating the facility? And the proposed regulations tell us that the cost of paying for the operation of the facility are not considered to be meal costs that are subject to 50% or eventually total disallowance for those provided in these eating facilities. So that's a good news. And that one I don't think we've ever seen totally clarified by the service in any way that was anywhere near formal. So that's a useful point to look at if you have that problem. Now, people that referred to any regulations, business associate, the IRS found there was some concern at 2018-76 that some people might broadly define business associate to cover everybody, because anybody could conceivably be a customer of you in some case. You know, everybody in the world might want to hire me to do tax work for them in my accounting firm. So everybody's business associate. So every meal I have with anybody counts as a business meal. No, sorry. There has to be a reasonable expectation of doing business. So the fact is that if I go out with my friends and I pick up the tab, there's no reasonable expectation of doing business with them. You know, that's not the nature of the relationship. So bottom line, I can't call them a business associate. Independent contractor will come up in a certain set of definitions. We look at reimbursement, and that's going to be a simple rule. There are going to be one set of rules for employees, another for independent contractors. Independent contractors, anybody you're reimbursing, it's not an employee that's performing services. So whenever we see that reference, that's what it's there. We'll also see references to client or customer. That is a party who receives services from an independent contractor when that word ever comes up in the definition. The payor is the person who is footing the money in an expense reimbursement arrangement. That also goes to an independent contractor. And general public is interesting because there's an exception to 274E of things provided to the general public. The general public in that context includes customers, clients, and visitors. The fact that your customer is going to be consuming the food doesn't mean it wasn't available to the general public. However, it does not include employees, partners, or independent contractors. And dividing the world into general public and not general public is going to be an issue here because we're going to discover, to get the exclusion when we get there, over half of the food and beverage must be consumed by members of the class called general public, not by the class, the employees, partners, independent contractors. If they consume more than half of it, then we only get to exclude the amount that the general public actually consumes, and the stuff the employees eat, 50%. Okay. Now, the reimbursement arrangement, we talk about that, what that is, that's also defined. For employees, it's essentially going to be an accountable plan where the employee provides the required 274D documentation if necessary, right, to back that up. And for independent contractors, it's going to essentially be either a written agreement between the parties, right, that expressly shows who will reimburse for expense or subject limitation, or a written agreement between the party expressly identifies the party subject to limitation. So for there to be an expense reimbursement arrangement, for independent contractors, it's got to be in writing. We need to address these issues in a written contract. And you'll discover that's really important, especially if the independent contractor doesn't want to get nailed with the 50% limitation. Now, the rest of the reg looks at these exceptions, and it looks at a category of them. We're going to look at these. There are five exceptions they deal with here. The first one talks about, which I've not seen used very often, but you can, if you treat a payment for a meal as compensation to the employer independent contractor, you get 100% deduction. But if you do that, you have to claim it as compensation to the employer or the contractor on your original tax return, and you have to put it on your payroll reports that you file for that year. Or let's say your 1099s. The Form 1099 rule is interesting here. You have to issue all required 1099s, and we have a minor expansion. We don't consider the $600 rule when looking at required if you're going to try to claim this full deduction. So, example, I pay Harry, who did something for me, and I paid for his travel, and I paid for, I paid him like $300 to do it, and I compensated him, $60 for meals. Well, if I want to claim 100% deduction for all of that, I have got to issue a 1099 to Harry that shows that entire amount as income to him. Now then, Harry will, of course, now inherit the disallowance. Don't worry about that. That's not my problem. That's his. But I can claim the deduction. But even though it's less than 600, and I can't say, well, I didn't issue it because it blows 600, if you do that, then you're going to take the full disallowance. You have to do it. If the Form 1099 is not issued, can't take the 100% deduction. Now, flip that. Let's say somebody hires my CPA firm, which is a corporation, to perform the service. Because they're a corporation, even if it's less than 600 and they reimburse us for travel or meals, or they reimburse us for meals, it doesn't matter. Because since we're a corporation, the 1099 rule is not required, regardless of a $600 limit, so they can still take the position it's all in our compensation. That'll get to our agreement for the most part. Okay. Now, they have some examples of payments treated as compensation to the employer independent contractor. And they like to use employee leasing companies here. It was kind of interesting. So the first example here, I guess that comes later. Wrong one. This is where we're to put in income. That's reimbursement, I'm thinking of there. Sorry about that. The first example we have in this section talks about a cafeteria for the employees. Remember, that's what we're going to get totally disallowed if we're providing free meals to the employees. Well, the IRS tells us how to fix that problem. If we record what every employee is taking for lunch and we put the fair value of the meal in their W-2, we can get a full deduction. Right? The employee is not going to get anything because just the meal. But we throw that in a W-2, it works just fine. Now, whether the employee is going to like you for doing that, that's a whole other question. Because you do not have to include it. The exception for the employee is still in there if the company sets up the proper plan. But here's the second problem. They said, but look, this in the W-2 doesn't solve everything. For instance, if you have a meal that is considered to be a meal for the convenience of the employer. So you have section 119, or you're excluded under 119. You're providing meals for convenience of the employer. And because of that, you're excluding it from the employee's W-2. Let's take a simple case. You decide during tax season, it's really important that your staff be down there all the time to answer questions and deal with things. So you provide the meals for them during tax season. Presumably, ignoring a private letter when we talked about, or ignoring a technical advice memorandum we talked about last year, where they think the existence of Uber Eats and that sort of thing may render it impossible to exclude it from a W-2. Let's ignore that one for the moment. If we take a look at this, where we're going to be able to exclude it from the W-2 because it was for our convenience, we're not going to be able to say, wait, I want a full deduction. I'm going to add it to the W-2. So if you're bringing in those pizzas during tax season, the employees do not pick that up in their wages. And because the reason it's there, the pizza's there, is to keep them there so they're not having to leave for lunch. They're not leaving for lunch. If that's the purpose, those are only one half deductible. Sorry. That's how it works. We bring in the pizzas. They all take the pizza back to their desk and they keep working so they can answer client questions and be available for any other questions the partners might have. Tough luck. You're going to get only 50%. Now, reimbursed expenses are the next big category. And again, the issue to remember here is I've seen people overread this one and decide everybody gets a full deduction. That's not what it says. Somebody's going to lose the deduction. Okay? That's the bottom line here in a reimbursement arrangement. But we have the option of deciding who gets clipped. Okay. If you are reimbursing employees, if you decide as an employer to put that reimbursement in their wages, and we get, and it does not appear to matter here if it would be an accountable plan, but in any event, you can figure out a way to design your plan to fail the accountable plan rules if you really wanted to. In that case, sorry, the employer will get 100% deduction because it'll be compensation. And I love it. They tell us the employee gets the deduction. No, he doesn't, most likely because it's 2106. So unless you're in those rare cases where the employee business expenses are above the line, which are very rare, he's not going to get it. But if it is above the line, he'll get the 50% disallowance. If it's excluded from the wages by the employer, which is the norm, then you're going to lose 50% of the meals and entertainment deduction. However, if a taxpayer, then if your client reimburses you for the employee's meal, then we go to the contractor rule, which is what's kind of interesting. Okay, if it's an independent contractor, remember that written agreement for our reimbursement plan? If that written agreement tells us who excludes 50%, that's who excludes it. If the agreement does not provide who excludes, then the contractor gets hit with the 50% if he or she does not provide an accounting with the required documentation necessary in 274, you know, to back it up. But if the contractor does provide that information, like separately bill for meals and provide the backup to the client, then the client gets hit 50%. Now, all of this is contingent on us having a written agreement. If we don't have that written reimbursement agreement, the contractor always takes 50% hit. That's the way it works in this case. Okay. Now we have some examples here. This is where they left employee leasing. If you have an employee leasing company and the leasing company pays the reimbursement and then bills back the client, right? So your client goes out, decides they're going to get rid of all the HR problems and go to employee leasing company. So all their employees now are technically employed by the leasing company. The leasing company does the reimbursement of employee expenses for meals. And then they bill it back to your client, right? The company that actually has people working there, has the people doing their work there, that's going to be on your client, the 50%. The leasing company won't get tripped for it. Okay? If instead of the leasing company reimbursing those employees, your client decides to write the check to reimburse leasing company employees, same result. Okay? They're going to get a 50% disallowance. And remember, in this case, they really have no way to throw it in the W-2. So for practical purposes, yeah, they're going to pick it up. They're going to have to get disallowed in that case. Now, again, if the agreement provides, the client will take the hit. So the first two assumed that we didn't say in the agreement who would take the hit. If the agreement says the client will take the disallowance, so you know the company that actually hires a leasing company is going to get the hit, the company hires a leasing company gets hit. Now that's why we work it. We don't look at the accounting rules there. If there's no agreement to reimburse, so we didn't put that in writing or we didn't have a written agreement, and that's going to probably be the biggest problem, times where you have these no written agreement for a reimbursement arrangement, the company gets hit with 50% disallowance. So if you don't want 50% disallowance, you want to shift it away from the defaults, then you've got to get a written agreement. In this case, the leasing company would get hit with 50% even if they tell the customer, this is how much what we're charging you that represents the expenses that are being incurred by your employees or your non-employees. When we go out and do that for meals, tough luck. They're still going to take the hit. Recreational expenses are the third category. And this one's neat because it gives us 100% deduction. And it specifically says, look, the point of this is things like, as they say, events such as holiday parties, annual picnics, summer meetings for the employees, these are allowed. The one caveat, though, is they cannot discriminate in favor of the tainted group. The tainted group consists of officers, those who own directly or indirectly more than 10% of the operation, and highly compensated employees. And we don't really have a definition for that third category, as far as I've found looking around for this one, but that category. If it primarily benefits those, then we're going to have a disallowance for those. Well, we have an example that walks through that. So here's our example. We have a holiday party we're going to hold end of the year. It's December. We decide to hold a holiday party, rent a ballroom at a hotel, have them pay for meals, you know, have them pay for the food, you know, have them pay for all that stuff, have the entertainment. That's 100% deduction. Interesting, this one sneaks in entertainment too. You'll see that in this example. But yeah, it will qualify. The whole thing's deductible. Don't worry about it. But if we decide the holiday party is only for the officers, right, only for the owners, then if we separately account for the food, they bill us separately for the food. In the case of the first party, we can just have a standard bill. They don't tell us what they're billing us for, but they throw in the food. In the second category, we've got to have a separate bill for the food. We'll get the 50%. Everything else is disallowed. Again, because we were doing it for the highly compensated, it was discriminatory. And that's really the test they use. Even though that's not the way the law is written, they're look, if it's not discriminatory, it seems to be okay, right? Now, the third category is the one that's going to upset some people I know. You buy snacks, and we do in our office, you know, you have some snacks in the break room, you know, maybe some stuff for people to munch on, some chips, some energy bars, you know, maybe even some healthy stuff. Now, that happens every so often, rarely though, since council seems like healthy stuff. And maybe you have some coffee and you have some soft drinks and bottled water, and you allow the employees to use that, you know, make use of it. Well, that entire amount is only going to be 50% deductible. Again, remember, de minimis amounts no longer can be counted 100%. You're not going to worry about who drank the coffee and put in their W-2, right? That's impractical in the extreme. But it means now you can't use that as justification for claiming a full deduction. Rather, the snacks now get disallowed just as if they're meals. There was a lot of discussion back and forth whether snacks should be treated differently than meals. The answer is no. Per the proposed reg example, they're the same. Actually, per the definitions you found for food and beverage, you found out pretty much snacks were going to be considered food, and it didn't matter if de minimis fixed them otherwise. That was not there. If you have a meal to keep the employee on site, that's 50% disallowed. So the example they gave, it was a medical facility that kept medical staff on hand for emergencies, so they provided meals so they didn't leave. That's for the benefit of the employee. That's not entertainment. You know, recreational issues, that still has to be picked up. Also, they have another example. You went out to dinner with your employee and a client, and it's your employee's birthday, so la la, end of the lunch, you bring out a dessert for the employee. You're not going to get 100% of that. The reason for the meal expenditure was that we had a business meeting. The business meeting rule is going to apply, and it'll be a 50% disallowance. Yep, can't get out of it that way. The next example, the next exception, if you make food or beverage available to the general public, it's 100% deduction, right? But remember, general public excludes employees, partners, independent contractors. So what we have to show is we can still count meals eaten by that group so long as the same food or beverage is offered to the general public, that is, people who are not those groups, our customers, our clients, potential clients, and just visitors, general public, and, you know, people in general. And over half of those food and beverages are consumed by members of the general public class. By the way, that's a key. It means you're supposed to be able to document that. That could be an issue, right? If you have that. Now, they have some examples in there. You have an open house for a real estate agent. They say, yeah, that'll count so long as, you know, you and your employees and your independent contractors didn't eat more than half of the food or drink more than half of the beverages. If you get above half, tough luck. Then we have to do only the amounts that the people that were visiting the open house would be considered 50%. Those considered by the employees, it's going to be considered 100%. Those by the employees, 50%. We have the same basic issue for an auto repair shop as a waiting room. And by the way, often, though, especially at car dealers, what they do there, and you see it all the time, is they have this waiting room, right? Keep people around. They love keeping you around the car dealership. And the employees are there, and they can get free coffee and snacks. And oh, by the way, the salespeople can get free coffee and snacks in that room. And why? Because they want the salespeople to commingle with the people there waiting for their cars to get fixed. Because while you're there, you're a captive audience, and they can try to sell you on a brand new car. Well, if over half of the food and beverage are consumed by the staff, right, from that free thing, because, you know, like I said, when I was last at the car dealer for service, you know, and it's one owned by Berkshire Hathaway, so I assume these are all over the country doing this. Yeah, they have a really nice place to eat, really nice area, and it's obvious right away that the salespeople make their first run there and start commingling with people. And it's just kind of interesting to run. That's why I tend to get out of the building as soon as I can. But I had to hang around a little bit extra waiting for my ride to come in to get back. So, yeah, we saw the salesperson tour. They have a third example of a summer camp. The summer camp, 100 of they gave meals to the staff and to the kids staying at the camp every day. Well, there are 20 staff members and 100 kids. Because the majority is being consumed by non-employees, we get the 100% deduction for everybody, including what we're giving to the 20 employees. But flip side, on the other side of that, if you're like Google, you have a company cafeteria, you're giving meals to the employees for free, and oh, by the way, some visitors and maybe customers that are brought in are also allowed to get the free meal. Only the part that the actual visitors, only the meals actually served to visitors or customers will get the 100%. Because the catch is 90% of the meals are going to employees. You can't basically somehow get that in by letting one or two visitors come in. Okay. Third and the final example are goods or services that are sold to customers. You get a full deduction for those amounts, and even if they're consumed by your employees, we'll find out, but it must be provided to customers for adequate full consideration. So you can't just say, oh yeah, as part of getting your car fixed, yeah, we'll let you have this food, right? No, you know, that's not really it. You're just throwing it in. Or they're performing services for you. That'd be a really fun backdoor way. So services don't count. It has to be for cash, for the food and beverage, not services provided for the food and beverage. But if you meet that requirement, and this is why you're doing, you know, then we're going to say this is going to be one of those, you know, overwhelming majority being done. We don't worry about the employee. And how do we know that? We have the IRS gives us an example. In the example the IRS has in this case, we operate a restaurant and provide food and beverages to its food service employees before, during, and after shifts for no charge. All of the amounts you pay for that, that's going to probably be a de minimis, so it's not going to be in their W-2, but you can still get your 100% deduction because it's coming out of product that's available for, that is offered for sale to the general public. It's actually generally sold to the general public, so we don't need to worry about that. So the 100% deduction, still available. Useful stuff. Now, what does that mean at the end here? These are proposed regs. Obviously, they may be changed. If you have comments, do not write me telling me how unfair it is that you can't use the snack room. Write the IRS, because comments are coming right now, okay? Don't write me. Don't write me. Don't post to Twitter. Don't post on some discussion board. Write to the IRS as a comment if you want that changed, okay? These are proposed. You can use them. I expect most people will in the interim. Because if you use them, you know the IRS is going to accept the position. If you do something different, you have to argue it. But you also can use 2018-76 if you see a difference. And I have to go back through it again, but I really don't see a major difference in 1876 or this. But you can use that. Again, keep your eye on this. This is significant. I spent the time on this week because I found over time people have lots of questions about this. People in industry have lots of questions about it. People in public, everybody has issues about how we do these food and entertainment routines. So these are the now new regs. Remember, keep your eye out for continuing education for 2020 for what you want to start planning for your live sessions being held in the state society offices. Live sessions offer you a significant advantage in that those are a real person who is keeping up to date on developments day to day. When you do self-study, the problem there is you're only as up to date as the book. And if the book hasn't been updated since September, then yeah, it's probably got some issues with things like the Secure Act. You know, it's not going to have that stuff in there if it talks about distributions from IRAs. So, you know, you got to watch that. Things happen. With a live person, even if something changes the day before, they can give what discussion they can have on that. And generally, we're keeping up in the way to so that whatever's happened, we can react right then we do the session. So take a look at those live sessions. This has been Kernfeld Tax Developments for the week of February the 24th, 2020, dealing with the entertainment and meals issue. You can catch our updates on the website, currentfulltaxdevelopments.com. You go there, too, to download the document for this week, which is where we write all of this up. The document actually, in this case, runs through 22 pages discussing these regs, has copies of all of the examples. Those examples are key because the IRS told you that's where they're going to tell you how this works in specific situations. Don't expect it to say so in the regs. If you have any questions or comments, you can send it to me, edzollers@currentfulltaxdevelopments.com. But again, don't tell me you don't like the snack rule. Tell the IRS you don't like the snack rule. Okay, go to Treasury. Don't go to me. I can't change it. Treasury still could. So they'd be the one to go to. You can also follow me at Twitter. That's @EdZollers, right? I follow discussions on Reddit. You can go there to /r/taxpros. That really is an interesting place. It's discuss a lot of issues, some technical and some just operating yourself. If you're a sole proprietor trying to figure out how people deal with the situation just operating a tax firm, that's also a useful place to find some of that discussion. I also check in on the discussion boards for Cal CPA on Tax Talk. That's open to any CPA around the country. And I also follow along on the groups. I'm members of the Arizona, Minnesota, and New Jersey societies, and I do try to follow along with questions posted on their Connect sites. So if you have a question or issue from those sites, you know, there, go online, post it there. If I see it and I think I can help, I'll try to respond to you. Well, like I said, it's been Travel and Entertainment Week. Maybe if nothing else happens, I'll talk about some of those SE courses next week. But I really felt this was by far the more significant item.